Well, hello everybody and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show, streaming live on BBS Radio from California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally, including iHeart, iTunes, and many, many more. And also potentially popping up on the Podopolo socially interactive podcasting platform that's new as well. I am glad today to be introducing you to a guest of mine. I spoke with her recently and I was really intrigued by her story. So I have with me Kristen Miller, who I'll formally introduce in just a moment. Hello, Kristen.
Hi.
And you have a beautiful Australian accent. No, not Australian, South African accent. So where are you actually calling in from today?
It's cl a tiny village close to Cape Town, South Africa.
Okay, excellent. So I love working with international women. If you're just dialing in for the first time and listening to the radio show, just to know that the reason I do these shows is my purpose, Yvonne E.L. Silver, I am your host for the show. My purpose is uplifting the spirit of humanity. And I do that with Words, Women and Wisdom, which is my brand, with Women and Wisdom Media, showcasing amazing women who are rising typically from tragedy to triumph and are now out there doing really interesting things, a lot of which have a mission-inspired element. And I'm passionate about working and talking with these entrepreneurs, those female entrepreneurs, successful business owners who have a mission-inspired focus in their business and are ready to celebrate the work that I do, which is mentoring, coaching, working with those mission-inspired business owners who are ready to level up from solopreneur to CEO. And Kristen and I have quite a few passions. For starters, her organization, Flaming Silver. I mean, what a great connection with my name, Yvonne Silver, as well. So let's do
True.
her formal introduction. Kristen was actually born into poverty, and so she comes from very humble beginnings where she often played barefoot in what she describes as cornfields, picturing life as My Little Pony, an episode from My Little Pony. So today, our interview is actually called From My Little Pony to Thoroughbred Pedigree Perfection. What does that mean? Well, she had an entrepreneurial spirit since the age of 11, and we'll dive deeply into her story. But it wasn't until 30, age 30, that she finally ignited her business flames, registered her first company. She then went on the fast track, and within 3 years, became, whoops. Oh, turn that off. Within 3 years, became a millionaire, only to discover that she was ultimately missing was causing her to be misaligned, misfiring, and unhappy. Oh my gosh, I so hear you, girl. Kristen made a life-changing decision in 2015 to change her life and follow her heart. Oh, I know this journey. Promptly sold or gifted everything she'd ever worked for, including the small business, and sorry, including the businesses she had built from the ground up, and moved to a small fishing village to start anew. And I'm not going to say any more. Suffice to say that she now thrives as a premium mentor with a hybrid business model, which incorporates coaching and consulting, and this concept of bringing in her equestrian background, working as a thoroughbred pedigree coach and consultant. And I'm so delighted that you're able to join me today after we recently met in an executive networking group. So, hello.
Hi. Thank you.
So, I know that in our conversation, we had a brief conversation a little while ago, you were talking about hitting rock bottom. So I think it's really relevant for the audience listening who are going to take away such wisdom nuggets. So there's going to be some really interesting things shared here. And then at the end, we're actually going to offer a couple of gifts for you. So stay to the end. You said that you hit rock bottom in 2015. So tell me a little bit about the context. What happened and what led up to that?
It was the year that I realized so many things about myself. So I love to refer to it as the very start of my awakening. So basically, I went through all the big stresses that I think a human generally can go through, a human in a normal environment anyway. But I realized that I was really misfiring and misaligned. I wasn't happy, basically. And I had friends and close family and even some peers tell me, you know, that in a sense, that's being ungrateful for what I did have, which was the mini mansion and investment properties and assets throughout the world and businesses and all of that. And I just wasn't. I deep inside, there was kind of knowing that was just guiding me to something better. I couldn't describe it. I couldn't figure out how to go about figuring it out in the first place. So what I love to say nowadays is that it's almost like I have had a complete identity crisis, which comes into a lot of what we teach. Yeah, just identity destruction. That was one of my lessons. And I couldn't figure out why everything that I'd done for all the years leading to that point was no longer working, you know, not in terms of even money, revenue for the businesses. So slowly, as my bank accounts and income was plummeting, so was my confidence, my self-esteem. I started knocking dearly on my self-worth, all the other great stuff that comes with it. You know, our emotions take a plummet and just absolute lack of focus. And I ended up manifesting crisis after crisis after crisis. So I had to put a lot of fires out, specifically in my personal life. So that was with the family, with my parents, because I'm the breadwinner. I take care of them. Mm-hmm. I had a horse run through fences and gosh, I could touch his femur bone. He ended up shattering Amanda's hips. She needed a double hip operation. My Great Dane did a double eye operation. It was just every level. And I ended up having an emergency operation in May that year, I remember. So it was just crisis after crisis. And I couldn't figure out what is happening or what am I doing to deserve this?
How am I attracting it?
Yep. So that was basically it.
So it's very often, I think, in our 30s, I know I certainly experienced it and many of my colleagues did too, this question of, you know, achieving a certain level of success deemed by the outside world, not always by our own measure of success. And then saying to ourselves, you know, is this all there is? Like, is this all there is to life? Yeah. And sometimes that's very often where kids come into play. And I know for me, it was like, okay, what I really, really, really need is, and one day it just popped in my head, was a child. And I was like, where did that idea come from? Because up until that point, I had been saying, nope, not ready to have children, not sure, you know, if that's my path or not. And it just popped in. And as soon as it popped in, it was like, oh, well, yeah, that's it. That is it. That is what is needed right now. So I understand where you're coming from with that piece. So tell me a little bit more about how did you start to turn things around from being at this sort of, you know, rock bottom, keep creating crises? How did you start to turn things around? What was the very first single step that you took?
Well, I can remember the date. It was 24 October 2015. And I woke up that morning and I had my beloved doggies on the bed with me. And I cried. I cried, but like scream tantrum, the worst kind of crying we can get.
Emotional and relief.
Yes, total. And I was slamming my fist on the pillow next to me, but crying at God. I'm shitting. I don't deserve this. I'm such a good human. Why is all this happening to me? And I WhatsApped a friend, a horsey friend at that, an equestrian guy, just a good friend. And the first thing he did, and it was such a miracle that I actually even got hold of him, because being equestrians, when we're out in the field, we often don't have our phones on us. You know, we leave them in the car. He answered instantly and gave the number an American vet, a Vietnam War vet, who was a medical doctor and had studied Chinese medicine in China for years afterwards. He never went back to the States after war, apparently. Dr. Paul West, I don't remember his name. And he said, Kristen, just phone Dr. Paul West and get an appointment today. And guess what it was? It was acupuncture. Of all the things in the world that I couldn't have imagined would come into my life that day. I mean, I was open-minded to acupuncture. I've just never... about it. I'd never gone for it. He was a miracle worker. And I remember he made me open my eyes that same day, 24 October, later that afternoon. And he said, look at these needles moving. And I was covered in them. Now, if you know me, I'm petrified of needles. I have never looked. I'm 41 today and I will not look at putting a needle in me. And he said, you have to open your eyes and see all this energy just exit. Everything was vibrating on me. It was, some of them were a bit painful, but not in a bad way. And it was my first opening into acupuncture. Right. And that was the catalyst that actually just put me on a great journey. And I went back weekly. He didn't even want to bill me. He just said, you are carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. He taught me about chi and energy and life force energy and how critical it is in our bodies and this alignment. And it started from there.
So interesting. I liken what you just shared with the story for, I was actually doing some energy healing work, Reiki work with my Reiki master. And she, after the session finished, and I think it was a back pain or a shoulder pain, I can't remember which now, but she said to me afterwards, I'm having a session this weekend where I'm teaching Reiki level one. And I don't know if you know anyone who needs to be there. And my hands literally started buzzing. And it was like, I think I'm supposed to be there. I mean, it was, they're buzzing right now. Right. And so when we start really tuning into our body and paying attention to what's around us, which we cannot do when we're moving, you know, like if you're operating on the fast track, you know, three businesses, you know, millionaire, 3 years, you're on the fast track, right? But we're going so fast that we very often miss the signs that are really important. And it's only when we slow down, and I liken it to standing in a pond. If you're, you know, standing there stamping your feet, all you're doing is kicking up all the mud on the bottom, and then everything is muddy and murky, and you cannot have the clarity that you can when you actually stop, stand still, let the water settle, and then it's amazing what you can actually see that was there all along. But we were just too busy and too clouded to actually see it. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So you started with the acupuncture and you started to have clarity. And then what happened?
Then I still, up to that point, I was still in the same business, real estate and investment facilitation. So I worked a lot with stock portfolios, literally some very, very high net worth individuals. And it was just moving currencies around a few countries in the world, Australia for one, for example, Canada, America, England, Dubai, anyway. So I still wasn't fixed if full on a path, on a new path. I still knew, all right, but I'm getting there. And at least the energetic sort of release, that work that I started on an embodiment level, I sort of started there, which may have been backwards if I look back now. But that just paved the way into the path. It wasn't until Christmas Day 2015, I remember that date as well. Remember, it was just myself in a big old 7-bedroom mansion, 2 dogs. And I was sipping my glass of Sauvignon Blanc on the outside patio that day. It's summer in South Africa in December. It was a beautiful day. And my big boy, Blue, had just had that double eye up for entropion. So I watched him like a hawk as he's fresh stitches. And I just sat there sipping, and this time, the voice was loud, that inner voice that had been trying to get my attention for over a year. This time it was loud and it said, this is it, enough, enough. And it was Christmas Day. I wasn't even working. And I listened to it. I literally put my glass of wine down then and there, called my boy in, cleaned quickly because we couldn't have grass or mud or dirt or anything over him. He loved rolling in the, he's a typical boy, rolling in the grassy dirt. And I phoned my parents. I said, I'm done. I'm done with Jackburg. I am done with this business. I am done with everything. I'm going to come move down to a coastal village where I'd moved them to. It's a retirement village. I said, I'm going to come live with you and I'm going to figure out something new. I don't know how or whatever. And that's the day I started selling everything, gifting away everything from a 7-bedroom house down to, that house was only 5 bedrooms, the one before it was 7. And gifted away everything. I promise you, I sold everything. I was packed, ready to move to this tiny village where I am now. I've been flitting around a bit, and just changed everything. And I still had no clue what exactly I was going to do. I knew only the voice was, it had been quiet. It was a whisper at first. This time it was loud and clear. And it said, quality over quantity. Life force over anything else. Over anything else. Even if you go broke, which ironically happened the following year. But yes.
So what happened then the following year? Now I'm really intrigued.
I'd moved down. I'd sold everything, relinquished shares in one of the international because I didn't even want money for it, to be honest. I didn't get a penny for it. That was my 50% shareholding in one of the GB2 companies. And I had to start from in a single room from a massive house in a single room with a Great Dane and a bull cross rescue. And I did. I still kept my office desk. That was it. I kept one office desk. I'd retrenched all the staff or helped them find new work. So that was a blessing, I must say. My team, I had ladies working for me in the home office. They did find new work. Many of, all of them, in fact, except one have since emigrated as well. And I had this compulsion. I can only call it a spiritual compulsion. I have no other English words to describe it, actually. I'm so glad.
It's like being on a tractor beam. Right. And you couldn't get off even if you wanted to. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. It was a compulsion to start meditating. Now, you must understand, up to that point, I'd been like any other normal human in the Western world, in the sense that we don't meditate. We don't slow down. It's that whole seventh gear racehorse thing. It was all so new to me, yet I couldn't stop. I remember my dad saying to me one day, he said, what on earth are you doing? You're never coming out your room. You're not making any money. What is going on? He literally asked me that. And I couldn't describe it exactly clearly. I just said, I know I'm on the track. I don't know how. I just know I am. And I honestly meditated for about a month in May, about 4 to 5 hours a day. Now, this made everyone think I'd lost the plot.
Of course.
Crazy. I was called loco. And then we're like, Kristen's having a midlife crisis. What is going on? I was 36 then. But it was such a beautiful thing that was happening from deep within. And it just started. And that's when I did, funny enough, touch on the energy healing through Christy Marie Sheldon and the likes of Dr. Dispenza. All the energetic components started coming into play. And being a businesswoman, I love sales. I love soulful sales. I'm full of integrity. So I'm still able to offer consulting work on the side. That is what paid the bills and kept the horse fed and the family fed and the dogs and the vet bills and all the typical stuff. But I just allowed myself the space to reconnect. And I said, somehow I have to incorporate horses. I was back with my horse, moved into the mountains here. And I was riding every day. And where was it as a child from young, very young? I always felt the closest connection to God or spirit, whatever we want to call it, was always when I was outdoors by myself with a horse, working with especially the dangerous ones, which is just a misunderstanding by most humans, but yeah. Especially with the problem children. And that was it. And I said, somehow, I have to do this. I have to combine my deep, sincere passion for the rescue and rehabilitation of horses into a brand, because I've got the business skill sets behind me and the experience, and I love business. That's how we serve people.
Right.
So I was like, how do I do the two together? That was my next dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and I have studied under some of the similar very well-known transformational leaders in the world, Joe Dispenza, Bruce Lipton, Dr. Sue Morda, Marcy Shymoff. I interviewed when I wrote my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. Ken Wilber, Tony Robbins, obviously. So, a lot of the greats, it's amazing what clues we can pick up, because, success leaves clues. And the opportunity to bring in something that is a passion and integrate that in with something that is serving the world with a very distinct purpose, solving a specific problem, that's one of the things that I love to do too. So one of my gifts is helping my clients to, much like when you're a kid, you have those join the dots books and you literally have 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're numbered out, and you can't see the picture until you've actually followed joining 1 to 2, 2 to 3, etc. Well, very often my clients come to me where they have all the dots, but they have no idea where the lines are to join the dots and make the picture complete. And that's what I can very easily see is where do we connect them and how is that coming to market to get monetized? So it's so fascinating and it's such a joy, isn't it? When you're working with clients who can bring, you can help them bring their best potential out because you know the journey that you've been on and the steps to take. Yeah.
Actually, awesome. I love your analogy, by the way, connect the dots. It's a perfect
analogy. It really is about that.
Yeah.
So you change gears completely from what you used to do, and now you're being a full-time mentor slash consultant slash coach. So let's talk a little bit about the work that you're doing today. So you were 36 when you began to honor your multifaceted talents and start bringing this work to the world, looking at how you could incorporate the concept of thoroughbred horses as a symbol of our innate perfect pedigree. So tell me a little bit more about how you help people play blissfully awakened into 7 and 8 figure arenas.
It's interesting how that came about. And to be honest, that took a few years of evolution and tweaking within my own brand suite to sort of find the right way most people, including non-equestrians, would understand that. And I can't say it hit me like a ton of bricks in some miraculous light, because it didn't. It took a while. When I first started out on my own, especially after having such an awakening, so breakdown into breakthrough, confidence was low. My self-esteem was low. And then I think like so many other normal people, when you first branch out in something new, you as a full-time work effort, whether it's your own business or, I mean, I haven't had a job, an actual job in years, but for people going into a new job, in the beginning, you're kind of nervous. It's that excited nervousness. It all boils down to, at the end of the day, I believe that our heritage, if we think about where we're from, how we're so divinely designed, and that's by God or whatever other higher, or, you know, the universe, who, whatever we believe in. To me, it's God. So I'll say God, the universe. I'll interchange those two terms. But it's just sheer perfection. We really are these little amazing human experiences running around with divinely perfect name. Everything, like the acorn, you know, we're just these little acorns that get to expand, fully express into our highest potential, which is the giant oak. And that is the thoroughbred perfect degree that I realized when I started working in the mentoring and coaching field very much more every day. So many people just, we forget that. We just forget how perfect the pedigree is. We know on this earth, it's a world of duality. So yeah, perfection does exist. And then I teach people, but that's the whole thing, is we viewed failure, for example, as such a bad thing. There's no such thing as failure. Actually, they're just little, to me, it's a requirement on the route to success. Like you have to fail in order to grow. It's a definite requirement. So it's
there's
about
lessons in life. I mean, I talk about that in my book as well. You know, the word failure, right? It's just simply a learning opportunity, right? This didn't work. So what do you do instead, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we wouldn't know what next to do if we didn't know what didn't work. It's normally the easiest way to find the next best path for us. Yeah. So I developed that and I started figuring out that as I was speaking to people, every time I could see it when the light bulb goes on, that when they actually remember, and I'm talking true awareness, not memory, when they go, wow, all right, so I'm sitting here right now as divinely perfect potential. That's it. Like, let me claim that as the first state of my being. And from there, we'll see where it goes. From there, we can follow our curiosity and connect those dots, as you so perfectly said.
It's interesting. Michael Lozier, his Law of Attraction book, I'm not sure if you've read that one. But he has a concept that he, when I had coffee with him, he agreed that I could put it in my book, So it's the concept of a capital letter T. So when we don't know the answer, we very often, as you just shared, we know what we don't want. So we know what's not working, right? What's not working. And therefore that gives us clues, much like when we were kids and we played opposites, right? What's the opposite of that? We can use his contrast, clarity through contrast concept. So you put a letter T down on a piece of paper, you put the issue that you're dealing with above the line, and then on the left side of the vertical line, you put down what you don't like, what's happening right now that you really don't like. You don't like how it feels, how it looks, etc., what's happening. And then on the right side, you use that as your starting point to, on the right side, then say, well, what's the opposite of that? So in my work with women in leadership, very often they're still being micromanaged by their leaders.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so you don't like being micromanaged. What do you want instead? Well, I want to have independence. I want to have authority and accountability at a new level and a new high, and to be not being scrutinized and having to prove myself all the time. So very often we don't know what we don't want. We don't know what we do want yet until we've gone through that exercise. So thanks for reminding me about that. And thank you, Michael Osier, for wrapping some tools around it.
Yeah, so true. I'm going to look for that book, by the way. Thank you for letting me know about it.
Oh, well, it's in my book too.
Well, then I'm just going to get a book.
Yeah. Just pick up a copy of Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. So it is actually on Amazon as an ebook and also as a physical book. And it's just going to be coming out later on this month in audiobook as well. So anyone who is dyslexic or just a woman, busy woman on the go who wants to listen through exercise programs, etc., and multitasking, you'll have an opportunity to listen along very soon as well. I'll talk more about that at the end. So right now we've got this thoroughbred horse as that symbol, and you're wrapping your business around that concept. And are you still doing, are you actually doing like equestrian training or horse therapy? Are you bringing in that level of focus around the horse, or working more on the mindset piece?
Very good question. You're a great interviewer. That is part of my big vision. So yeah, people think I'm insane. I don't share it openly with everyone, but I cannot wait to have my flaming sword. In America, they call it a ranch. Me, I'm very comfortable with the word sanctuary, and I do want my 20 to 80 acres so that I can bring that in again. At the moment, to answer your question, no, I actually gifted my last thoroughbred away, Westie for short, west of London. It took me 6 months to find the right mama for him, and one to take him on a youngster who can spend all the time with him. And I knew I was going to emigrate. And it's a big deal to emigrate with a horse. And I don't just mean money. I mean the stress on the animals. And he is a natural fighter, ex-breeding stallion. So he doesn't go down easily. Let's put it that way. So anyway, I gifted him away again, not into it for money, this pure passion. And one day when I have that sanctuary, that ranch, I will absolutely be rehoming thoroughbreds off the track. We call them OTTBs for anyone who doesn't know the racehorse industry, because so many are just left to die. They're taken to slaughter pens. It's just fact. It is just an industry fact. It's awful. Sorry, I'm putting my hand up here. I'm quite anti-racing.
Tragic.
Just love the thoroughbred.
Yeah.
As an animal lover, okay, of course, I have subjective view on that. But then absolutely, I've seen magic in real life with horses, both horses who've been rescued and people who needed it without realizing it. And the magic that can happen, I just got goosebumps all over. Oh, I have seen huge military, for example, with hardened pasts, just break down on a horse, absolutely give them the kind of energetic affection and bonding that they need, that the men, for example, didn't realize. That happens with women too, for sure. So yes, that is in the future. Right now, no, I just want to get to the States. I'm going to the Carolinas, where there is horse country, South Carolina specifically, all of it, and Florida. And yeah, I will start that up in physical form. It's actually part of my, it's the first workshop that I do with my Elite Evolution clients. In quarter one, we end it with a trust, energy, and leadership live experience. So I fly them down for a weekend, and that's what we do. We work live with horses. So, you know, people could lie to themselves and to others. They cannot lie to horses. You could try, but the horse will get out of you.
I can speak to that for sure. I did have an experience thinking it was probably about 10 years ago now, doing some equestrian equine healing work. And at the time I was telling myself something that actually was not true. And when we went into the arena, the horse that was in there just wouldn't come near me. And it was like, okay, what's going on here? And it was when I was prompted to ask myself some pretty deep, serious questions. And, you know, the natural answer emerged that that's when he finally came up and actually was wanting to be with me because I was in my full integrity. And it was so fascinating. Such an interesting day.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I wish I was there. It's just so beautiful when that happens. It's amazing. Horses are honest. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's horses and dogs, right? They just know. When we picked our puppy, I have a little Sheltie. We have a little Sheltie, my husband and I. And when we went to the breeders to pick one out of a litter of seven, the breeder said, you know, oh, don't worry about the, you know, the mom. She won't come anywhere near you. She's not really, you know, that friendly with people. Well, she let her out and she came bounding over and she was all over us. And then as we were trying to decide, looking at this litter of puppies, and she was sort of, you know, still in shock that the mom had actually been so effusive with us. My husband was saying, well, how about this one? And how about that one? And this really bouncy Sheltie that was quite big and very outgoing caught his attention. And, you know, working from home at the time and with my clients home based, I thought, oh, you know, I can't have quite such a boisterous little kid running around here. And as we were looking at some of the others, and she was saying, oh, there's three that are fairly similar in temperament. One is a little bit more outgoing than the other. And I looked down and I said to my husband, I think we've been chosen. And one of the puppies had fallen asleep and curled up on my foot. Like, I think we're taking her. She's already picked us.
Yeah. So cool. They do pick us. Yeah. That's beautiful. Just a quick one on that, if you don't mind, Shane. It reminded me in that same year, 2015, my big Great Dane, he was extraordinarily large, even for a Great Dane, German bred, highly pedigreed, rescue though, but he was the runt of the litter. That's why they didn't want him. So of course I said yes. He hated men. Probably because I've been single for so long, but he really didn't like men. So he could get, let me just put it this way. I was wary with him with men, and I just moved into the home in Johannesburg. I had a few people over for a nice big a barbecue, as they say, and just, you know, welcome me to the city. Blue, the Great Dane, picked out this man. At the time, it was my best friend's fiance, picked him out. I've got a photo because I couldn't believe it. And he just kept leaning on him, which is a Great Dane thing. But Blue really leaned on him and kept circling around him, but in the most effective way. I promise to this day, Ashley and I both said to each other, wow, this is odd behavior for Blue. 3 months later, that man committed suicide. Best friend lost her fiance. He committed suicide 3 months later.
Oh my God.
He was hurting that badly, typical of the way I think plenty men are raised, in that you can never show weakness, you know, a woman too, but he was hurting that badly that none of us could see it. My dog did. Mm. He really did. He hung himself 3 months later. Blue saw it a mile away and none of us, you know, could see that. Yeah. Wow.
So all of this intuitive work, all of this stepping into your true path, stepping into embodying who you are, no doubt is why you are particularly passionate about creating these transformational shifts through not just mental resilience, but emotional agility. Love that word. Reminding brave business warriors that they themselves are their greatest asset, and taking your diverse background across, you know, three continents as the basis for your visionary thinking. So the ideal type of client that you love working with are those business successful entrepreneurs already who have lost that zest and aren't necessarily on their true path. Is that the people that you love working with the most?
Yeah, it forms the majority of my client base until last year, but that was a COVID thing. But they do. I think because it has been so ingrained, and I found this in a lot of successful people. Now, you and I definitely know that success is different to everyone. But I am talking about the generally perceived successful people that are on that that racetrack that just doesn't stop. Right. So they're really six-figure earners plus. In fact, often millionaires. So my affectionate term for them is the misfiring, misaligned millionaires. So the triple M. They're a triple M client. And I say it with big love because I've been there. And they've never yet felt, I want to say, almost safe enough or even confident enough to be able to express that they're not actually happy. It often comes in men. I think it's the way society conditioned them that they're not permitted to show weakness or emotions. You know, big men don't cry. Same with women. And I did read your profile. So true. We were similar, you know, raised in the same way. It's just a societal bunch of BS, if you ask me. But anyway, so they feel that. And this is of men and women. And finally, it feels as if they've got safe space that they can open up and openly share how miserable they are. And it's not a bad thing. They're not moaning. It's not necessarily that they're expressing that they're not grateful for all they've developed and done. And they're actually, honestly, when they really get open with me, they tell me how sick and tired they are of hearing how they're doing so well and your life's so amazing. Those stories, they actually get very frustrated in hearing it, because I'm not kidding when I say I've had a man didn't leave his garage once. He found me crying in his Bugatti, in his mansion, LA client, crying. He didn't even want to go and face his own business that particular morning, you know. Mm-hmm. So I love being able to offer it. I call it quite a sacred space, and it takes a bit of time. It's all about trust, and it is intimacy in a different way, both for men and for women. For women, it's the opposite generally in my clients. Some are, for example, wealthy housewives, and they've lost a sense of purpose because the kids are grown. That is one of the most common reasons women in particular come to me, is they say, all right, so I've done my duties as a mom, as a wife, and now what? I'm empty, I'm bored, I'm lost, and I want to do what I want to do for a change, you know. Yeah. Which makes the husband look at them as if they're crazy. Like, what are you doing now?
Again.
Yeah.
Isn't totally. It how other people feel so quick to judge when you're not on a traditional, you know, path? You don't have a traditional job, a job, that is, you know, that is right or wrong. And I remember, you know, part of my story, age 11. I mean, I'd already been criticized so much as a young kid by my father, who came back from the war with PTSD, and he literally drained the dignity right out of my mom. He was a very, very angry man. She had once been a very successful businesswoman, and he literally, over the time they were married, drained her right out, because he was constantly criticizing, constantly angry, such a perfectionist. Everything had to be in order. Which I now know to be a blueprint style personality. And I was an action oriented kid. It clashed like this. But literally, you know, him screaming at me after I missed by 2 marks passing a very important exam. And he screamed at me that I would never, ever be successful in life. Well, thanks. I'm just about to go into high school. And that just, you know, that was like the final straw for me. And so when I got to high school, I was very, very quiet, because I had been criticized so much that, according to his standards, you know, exams, if you don't pass your exams, you're not successful. Well, guess what? No, it didn't seem to really matter very much to Bill Gates that he didn't, you know, finish university, right? I mean, it's not all about that. Yeah. So, yes, other people
totally agree.
Can be really hurtful. And that was one of the reasons I wrote my book, Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, because I really wanted, first off, women to be fully supported and have, you know, 40 different words and word concepts that they could use in their everyday language, words to eliminate plus words to put into your sentences to add more power so that they could feel more confident, elevate their language, not be put down, and ask for what they want to get it. And it's about, you know, what other people think of you, because that really is, as you know, T. Harv Eker says, it really is none of your business. It's just their, not truth. It's just their opinion. Even Marcy Shimoff, when I interviewed her leading up to launching my book and was able to quote her in my book, you know, she talked about being in a hotel room after this big speaking engagement. I think she said there was about 2,000 people in the audience, and, you know, sold and autographed about 5,432 books, went back up to her hotel room, beautiful room overlooking Lake Michigan, and burst into tears. And she was just, again, in that place of being, by all accounts, I'm successful, and yet I'm just not happy. And that was the trigger for her to go on her journey, writing her book about happiness. And
Happy for no reason.
Happy for no reason, So it can happen so easily when you're on the fast track, when you're thinking that you're, you know, climbing this ladder of success. It can happen so easily that we get so focused on the money and the money that is coming in, we lose that intrinsic connection to the business. So that's part of my work too, is envisioning first, you know, what are your passions? What are the things you love to do? How does this connect to what your business idea is? And really centering that around having a mission-inspired element in the business, so that when things do go haywire, as, you know, entrepreneurs, things crop up, that you're really grounded in your purpose for the business. So what have you learned along the way? If you, you know, had picked a couple of lessons that you wanted to share with the audience, what do you think are some of the most important lessons that you've learned on your journey that you'd like to bring forward?
Well, the first one, you hit the nail on the head right now, in that when you're truly grounded in your purpose and you're working from a place of inspiration, I like to call it from inspirata, that comes from within. There's the self-identity has nothing to do with business. And so I like to teach, especially my female clients, that your worth has nothing to do with any doing thing, material thing in this world. I said, you can be sitting barefoot on your own living room floor, and you are so divinely worthy that you can't put a price tag. And they normally laugh at me. I said, no, I'm serious. When you're washing the dish, you are as priceless as you are, whether you're running a $1 billion corporation or not. So break the worth, your intrinsic worth, anything else that is doing. And then as you touched on, one of the lessons I learned was that just because we fit somewhere, it doesn't mean that that's where we're meant to be. So I did very well as a buyer's advocate. That's what I was a private buyer's advocate for international real estate and portfolios. And just because I did well at it, I'd allowed that to become a part of, I call it the misfiring wiring in my subconscious, thinking that's my identity as such. And I finally gave myself permission to do what I really wanted to do, which was help more people in a deeper way. I'm still friends today with a lot of those clients. We still talk today. I loved serving them, but these are the type of people that can drop $850,000, you know, in a second. I was like, how can I help more people who aren't in that position? And in a deeper way, you see, part of mine definitely came out of intrinsic healing. It's one of my gifts. So that was one of the lessons. And then, yeah, so I just help people show them, you just start from that baseline of buying potential, because it leads into my other favorite tip for people, anyone who's listening, is that our imagination, to me, is one of God's greatest gifts. And yet it is something that in my life, in many ways, as a kid growing up, school, society, parents, whatever, they just want to bash it out of you from the moment you go to school. Maybe not today's time. Maybe I'm dating myself. Oh, well. But imagination is like every body part, our eyebrows, everything has a purpose. Think about it this way. So does your imagination. So to me, it is definitely step one of your manifestation. And I've worked with a lot of clients who forgot how to dream. And I mean, just dream, like allow your imagination to run wild. So you want a $28 million property or not, or whatever the case may be for that human. You know, do you want to build a school for the underprivileged? Do you want to build a library in New York City? You know, anything. I'm just saying, allow it to run wild and start connecting with the emotions that tie in with your heart. It's got to be a heart-centered space. That's part of the envisioning, as you said, Nana, I think it's just so true. So I think that imagination is one of our six high faculties that is, I think, underestimated and misunderstood as adults. People always go, no, creativity is not for me. I'm like, actually, you're a divine creator. You are, that is, you're designed that way. So let's use it to your, you know, let's make it powerful for you. Yeah. And then the second gift that I love reminding people to use is the intuition. Because if being raised like, and if they're successful and functioning in full speed, seventh gear all the time, as you know, you don't get to hear it. It might be a tiny little whisper, a little, tiny little nagging voice in the back of your head, but you don't actually hear it, like really take it in until you stop. As you said, you can't keep kicking up the mud. You can't see clearly in ripples, even if there's no mud, if there's ripples in the water. So to me, intuition is just, I always say people become BFFs with your intuition. That's my number one. It really is there to lead you on the correct path. Yeah. The other one I wrote was decongest your emotions. And that's where emotional agility, we all know about emotional intelligence, which I'm a big believer in as well. Mm-hmm. And then emotional agility is just that ability to allow them to float up. The analogy I use with clients is allow your feelings, because we're taught all these years, you've got to master your emotions. Don't let them control you. That's true to an extent, but I say, allow them to float up, let them sit at your dinner table. You just don't have to feed them, you know, acknowledge they're there, but like a naughty dog, eventually they get, you know, they must go out, but allow them to sit there at the dinner table, feel the feelings. That means you scream and cry and break things, do it. I'd rather have you express than suppress anything, because that creates oppression, not only of your mind state, but it becomes a physical thing if you're not regularly allowing that energy to express. It's got to express. Otherwise, you end up like many people and getting help from other parties, which is also perfectly okay. So yeah, I love helping the decongestion of emotions. There are normally these entanglements of people built on a whole bunch of false beliefs and limitations. Anyway, and my one, oh yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking back to, you know, when I did my executive coach certification. So my program was through Royal Roads. It was a 6-month-long program with an exam at the end, which was the only time I got a 4.0 in anything at university. So that just, you know, cemented my passion for coaching. But literally, we had a final exam. I had to meet with somebody that I'd never met before. I had about 7 minutes to get to know them a little bit. And then we dived into the topic for coaching. And it was almost like, you know, finding the middle of a ball of string. Right. You know, but what is the real issue here? And then being able, as you know, as soon as you understand what the real issue is, or they understand what the real issue is, to be able to really ask, you know, maybe 2 or 3 questions that would crack it right open. And then they could see that their own answer. And that, of course, is, you know, the science of coaching. It's not about me telling you. It's about me asking powerful questions to enable you to self-discover your own answer, because I don't know how risk-averse you are, or how fast you want to go, or how willing you are to really make change. you know that, and therefore you're going to pick your best solution and be attached emotionally to it and committed to it because it was your idea. It wasn't my idea, right?
Yeah.
So it's so beautiful to be doing this kind of work. And I'm so glad that we connected, because what I'm sensing, and I know there'll be probably a couple of my coaching colleagues saying, why are you interviewing another coach on your show? Well, because first off, I believe in abundance. And secondly, I think our gifts are, while we're, you know, still having a lot of the same underpinnings of, you know, create space first, don't suppress emotion, let emotion flow, because it is energy in motion. Being aware through through doing gratitudes and doing meditation that the silence is where the gifts really lie, and that we are all like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, when we come together and we put all those individual experiences, some of which might seem painful, and why the heck did we go through it? And you start putting it into a picture that actually starts knitting together, and you can see the beauty of all of those gifts, whether they're tragedy, triumph, etc., that really have made you and I the unique people that we are. So I don't serve men, you serve men. Great, right? I love horse riding. I started my journey on horse riding when I was about 30. One of those, you know, is this all there is to life? What did I miss out on as a kid? My parents couldn't afford to send me to horse riding school. And so I decided I was going to, you know, take the lessons myself and do it myself when I was 30. And so from 30 to when I got pregnant was an opportunity for me to dive back into something I had longed to do as a kid. So I'm glad that you're bringing this work to the world. And I look forward to seeing, you know, what evolves. I do have some connections also in the Carolinas as well. So there's some beautiful people and some fantastic energy in certainly sort of in and around the Asheville area in particular.
Good, because I'm going up close to Asheville and I'm dying to see it. I've never yet been. I'm going to Lake Norman, but I've never yet been.
Yeah. Well, there's a lady up there that I'm happy to connect you with. I think she'd really appreciate what you're up to, and vice versa. Jennifer Hough, her name is, H-O-U-G-H. Amazing, amazing lady. She's a seer and a seeker.
I think is love the, that.
Yeah, the best way to, very, very smart lady. Best way to describe it. So as we start to sort of pull things together here, I'm curious, you know, we've shared so much of your story. How did those experiences ultimately come to help you improve your confidence as a woman in business? Because that's obviously what I'm all about too, is how do women have more confidence? Partly it's about knowing that their back isn't up against the wall and that they have the resources they need, either connections, support, finances, space, all of those things. But what have you learned about confidence, and particularly that you can share for women?
The biggest lesson I learned was that confidence is bred by action, even when it feels awfully scary. Like, I really used to be what they call, if I can say it on the show, I was quite ballsy in a boardroom, a real corporate setting. Mm-hmm. So I was renowned as a woman for that. And then here I came up going, oh gosh, all of a sudden I've got a compulsion to meditate and to learn about chakras, and Reiki was one of them. Yeah, so I felt like a right rainbow gone wrong. My Little Pony episode just went upside down. I was like, what is happening? And day by day, just taking a little bit more action. First, I started playing with the logo. For example, I took a childhood drawing, the original logo before the one you see now, and I took it to a friend and I said, make that a logo, just the sketch, make it a logo. And he did. And it was step by step. And I felt incredibly nervous when I published my first website after being whom I'd identified with my entire life and everyone else who knew me. And here I was offering an experimenting with life guidance, you know, in business mentorship. It feels odd. And I'm here to say that every day you take just one little tiny step closer towards your dream, even if it's small, it's the action that builds the confidence. You don't get confidence in then take action. It actually comes the other way around.
Yeah.
So, and you just get more confident as you do.
Yeah.
So you find the inner strength, which is the thoroughbred pedigree. Just remember, you're a hot looking thoroughbred. You find that, you start there and know that you can run a race if you need to. But I prefer walking as well. I'm with Yvonne on like steady the pace, harness the energy, take it slowly and really recognize from within. To my favorite saying is your greatest wealth lies within, and then one step at a time. It's all you need to focus on, one step.
Love that. And definitely, you know, speaking about confidence in my book about, you know, what is it? Where does it come from? I mean, a lot of times from my experiences, it's come from doing something that I doubted I'd ever be able to do and doing it and surprising the heck out of myself. T.R. Becker had a great, you know, 4-day warrior camp. And I remember climbing a local mountain, Yamnuskar, that's here in Alberta. And, you know, there was five stages and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not in shape for hiking. I don't do hiking. So I got to level one and my legs were like quite sore already. And there was five levels. Plus we had somebody on crutches that we had to take up as a team to get to the very plateau summit and be able to look down from this sort of tabletop over the drop off, which was incredible. As you can tell, I did make it up there, but I mean, partly because my legs got numb and I just said, well, they're already numb, so I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, just keep going.
Die over the top. But coming down, we actually had someone pass away because they fell, hit their head, had a previous heart condition. And it was so magical to watch what happened afterwards, which was part of a really big lesson for me, was how companies that have heart can make such an impact in a split second because they changed the whole agenda up. So I didn't get to do fire walking that night, which is what we were supposed to be doing. But we raised $250,000 in about half an hour with all of the contributors who were at the workshop for this gentleman's family. So that, you know, it was able to turn again, tragedy to triumph. And that's what I'm all about. So
and that's fast turnaround. Wow.
It's been really interesting. And I've so enjoyed our conversation. I definitely want to keep in touch. And also, we talked about a couple of gifts for the listeners. So my first gift is actually, if you go to my website, which is Words, Women, and spelled out A-N-D, wordswomenandwisdom.com, you can actually download a 3-chapter excerpt free of my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. Just click the red button on the left, and then you can actually be invited to join the Women and Wisdom VIP community and download that 3-chapter excerpt. So you get part of the 40 words. You won't get the whole thing, but you get a taste of it. And Kristen has also brought a gift. So tell me about what you're sharing and how people can get access to your gift.
Okay, no problem. They just have to go to, it's not even on my website. It's really a special gift that's not publicly shared. They go to www.flamingsilver.co. So flaming is in light a candle, light a flame, silver, yep, like Yvonne's surname.co for connect, collaborate, co-create, not .com, but /envision, envision. Because I'm giving that away because it's a big guide, just handy to anyone who's feeling maybe a bit lost or a bit unsure. It is not just about goal setting. Goals are subsets of intentions anyway. It's about reigniting the sparks of your big vision for life. Maybe you're in a spot, if you're listening, maybe you are, that you're feeling unsure, especially after COVID and whatever may have happened. Maybe you lost the job that you always thought you were meant to be in and other new magnificent self is starting to pull out because you were forced to be in a position to work from home, something like that. So it's just to help you ignite a really big vision. And it starts, we reverse engineer everything backwards from the big vision. So yeah, it's www.flamingsilver.co/envision.
Envision with an E. Excellent. So I'll put that in the show notes as well. Thank you for being so generous with your gift. of your wisdom, your knowledge, and for bringing your whole self, all of the stories and all of the learnings to the listeners today. I've really enjoyed connecting with you, and I hope that we will continue to stay in touch, maybe do some fun stuff together since we have such a strong alignment here. And as I said, my focus is on women who have mission-inspired businesses, who are already, you know, six-figure business owners, successful business owners, and looking to add something that is going to bring in more purpose as they step up from a solopreneur to a CEO. If you're looking to be scalable, to add more staff, that's an area that I can bring distinct expertise. So thank you for joining me today, Kristen. It's been a pleasure. And listeners, go make sure that you pick up those two gifts free of charge, our wisdom that we're sharing, and have yourself a beautiful day. Thank you so much. And bye for now.